Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued to speak to Maharaj Parikshit. One day, when Mother Yashoda saw that all the maidservants were engaged in other household affairs, she personally began to churn the yogurt. And while churning, Yashoda remembered the childish activities of Krishna, and in her own way, she composed songs and enjoyed singing to herself about all those activities. Dressed in a saffron-yellow sari, with a belt tied about her full hips, Mother Yashoda pulled on the churning rope, laboring considerably. Her bangles and earrings moving and vibrating, her whole body was shaking. Because of her intense love for her child Krishna, her breasts were wet with milk. Her face, with its very beautiful eyebrows, was wet with perspiration, and the malati flowers were falling from her hair. And while Mother Yashoda was churning butter, Lord Krishna, desiring to drink the milk of her breast, appeared before his mother, and in order to increase her transcendental pleasure, Krishna caught hold of the churning rod and began to prevent Yashoda from churning. Mother Yashoda then embraced Krishna, allowing him to sit down on her lap. And she began to look upon the face of Krishna with great love and affection. Because of her intense affection, milk was flowing from her breast. But when Yashoda saw that the milk pan on the oven was boiling over, she immediately left Krishna in order to take care of the overflowing milk. Although child Krishna was not yet fully satisfied with drinking the milk of his mother's breast, he became very angry, and thus biting his reddish lips with his teeth, Krishna, with false tears in his eyes, broke the container of yogurt with a piece of stone. He then entered a room and began to eat the freshly churned butter in a solitary place. After taking down the hot milk from the oven, Mother Yashoda returned to the churning spot. And when she saw that the container of yogurt was broken and that Krishna was not present, she concluded that the breaking of the pot was indeed the work of Krishna. At that time, Krishna was sitting on an upside-down wooden mortar for grinding spices, and he was distributing milk preparations, such as yogurt and butter, to the monkeys as he liked. Because of having stolen, Krishna was looking all around with great anxiety, suspecting that he might be chastised by his mother. Upon seeing him, Mother Yashoda very cautiously approached him from behind. When Lord Sri Krishna saw his mother, stick in hand, Krishna very quickly got down from the top of the mortar and began to flee, as if very much afraid. Although yogis try to capture Krishna as Paramatma by meditation, desiring to enter into the effulgence of the Lord with great austerities and penances, the yogis still fail to reach him. But Mother Yashoda, thinking that same personality of Godhead Krishna to be her son, began following just to catch him. And while following Krishna, Mother Yashoda, with her thin waist, overburdened by her heavy breasts, naturally had to reduce her speed. Because of following Krishna very swiftly, her hair became loose, and the flowers in her hair were falling after her. Yet, she did not fail to capture her son Krishna. When caught by Mother Yashoda, Krishna became more and more afraid, and admitted to being an offender. And as she looked upon him, Yashoda saw that Krishna was crying, his tears mixing with the black ointment around his eyes. And as Krishna rubbed his eyes with his lotus hands, he smeared the ointment all over his face. Catching her beautiful son by her hand, Mother Yashoda mildly began to chastise him. Mother Yashoda was always overwhelmed by intense love for Krishna, not knowing who Krishna was or how powerful Krishna was. Because of maternal affection for Krishna, Yashoda never even cared to know who Krishna was. Therefore, when Yashoda saw that Krishna had become excessively afraid, she threw the stick away and instead desired to bind Krishna so that he would not commit any further naughty activities. O King Parikshit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no beginning and no end, no exterior and no interior, no front and no rear. In other words, Krishna is all-pervading. Because Krishna is not under the influence of the element of time, for Krishna, there is no difference between past, present, and future. Krishna exists in his own transcendental form at all times, and being absolute beyond relativity, Krishna is free from distinctions between cause and effect, although he himself is the cause and effect of everything. That unmanifested person who is beyond the perception of the senses, Adhokshaja, had now appeared as a human child, and Mother Yashoda, considering Krishna her own ordinary child, decided to bind him to the wooden grinding mortar with a rope. But when Mother Yashoda was trying to bind the offending child, she saw that the binding rope was short by a distance the width of two fingers. Thus, Yashoda brought another rope to join to it. This new rope was also short by a measurement of two fingers, and when another rope was joined, it was still two fingers too short. As many ropes as Yashoda joined, all of them failed. Their shortness could not be overcome. Thus, Mother Yashoda joined whatever ropes were available in the household, but still she failed in her attempt to bind Krishna. Meanwhile, Mother Yashoda's friends, the elderly gopis in the neighborhood, were smiling and enjoying the fun. And similarly, Mother Yashoda, although laboring in that way, was also smiling. All of them were struck with wonder. And because of Mother Yashoda's hard labor, her whole body became covered with perspiration, and the flowers and comb were falling from her hair. When child Krishna saw that his mother was thus fatigued, Krishna became merciful to her and finally agreed to be bound up to the wooden grinding mortar. O Maharaj Parikshit, this entire universe, with its great exalted demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and Lord Indra, is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And yet, the Supreme Lord has one transcendental attribute. He comes under the control of his devotees. This was now exhibited by Krishna in this pastime as Lord Damodar. For neither Lord Brahma nor Lord Shiva, not even the goddess of fortune, who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the deliverer of this material world, such mercy as that received by Mother Yashoda. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, Son of Mother Yashoda, is accessible to devotees who are engaged in spontaneous loving service. But he is not as easily accessible to mental speculators, to those striving for self-realization by severe penances and austerities, or to those who consider the body to be the same as the self. While Mother Yashoda was very busy with household affairs, the Supreme Lord Krishna observed twin trees known as Yamala Arjuna, which in a former millennium had been the demigod sons of Kuvera. In their former birth, these two sons, known as Nalakuvara and Manigriva, were extremely opulent and fortunate. But because of pride and false prestige, they did not care about anyone, and thus Narada Muni cursed them to become trees. O great and powerful saint Shukadeva, what was the cause of Nalakuvara and Manigriva's having been cursed by Narada Muni? What did they do that was so abominable that even Narada, the great sage, became angry at them? Oh, kindly describe this to me. O King Parikshit, because the two sons of Kuvera had been elevated to the association of Lord Shiva, they became very much proud. They were allowed to wander in a garden attached to Kailasa Hill on the bank of the Mandakini River. And taking advantage of this, the two boys used to drink a kind of liquor called Baruni. Accompanied by women singing after them, they would wander in that garden of flowers, their eyes always rolling in intoxication. And within the waters of the Mandakini Ganges, which were crowded with gardens of lotus flowers, the two sons of Kuvera would enjoy young girls, just like two male elephants enjoying in the water with female elephants. O Maharaj Parikshit, by some auspicious opportunity for the two boys, the great saint Devarshi Narada once appeared there by chance. But seeing them intoxicated with rolling eyes, Narada could understand their situation. Upon seeing Narada, the young naked girls of the demigods were very much ashamed. Afraid of being cursed, they covered their bodies with their garments, while the two sons of Kuvera did not do so. Instead, not caring anything about Narada, they remained naked. Thus, seeing the two sons of Kuvera naked and intoxicated by opulence and false prestige, Devarshi Narada, in order to show them special mercy, desired to give them a very special curse. Thus, Narada spoke as follows. Among all the attractions of material enjoyment, the attraction of riches bewilders one's intelligence more than having beautiful bodily features, taking birth in an aristocratic family, or being learned. When one is uneducated but falsely puffed up by wealth, the result is that one engages one's wealth in enjoying wine, women, and gambling. Unable to control the senses, rascals who are falsely proud of their riches or their birth in aristocratic families are so cruel that to maintain their perishable bodies, which they think will never grow old or die, they kill poor animals without mercy. Sometimes they kill animals merely to enjoy an excursion. While living, one may be proud of one's body, thinking oneself a very big man or minister, president, or even a demigod. But whatever one may be, after death, this body will turn either into worms, stool, or ashes. So, if one kills poor animals just to satisfy the temporary whims of the body, one does not know that he or she will suffer in one's next birth. For such a sinful miscreant must go to hell and suffer the results of one's sinful actions. So the question arises that while alive, who does the body belong to? Does it belong to its employer, oneself, the father, the mother, or the mother's father? Does it belong to the person who takes it away by force? Or does it belong to the slave master who purchases it? Or the sons who burn it in the fire? Or, if the body is not burned, does it then belong to the dogs that eat it? So among the many possible claimants, who is the rightful claimant? Not to ascertain this, but instead to maintain the body by sinful activities, is not good. After all, this body is produced by the unmanifested material nature, and again annihilated and merged in the natural elements. Therefore, the body is the common property of everyone. Under the circumstances, who but a rascal claims this property as one's own, and while maintaining it, commits such sinful activities as killing animals just to satisfy one's whims? Unless one is a rascal, one cannot commit such sinful activities. Atheistic fools and rascals, who are very much proud of their wealth, fail to see things as they are. And therefore, returning them to poverty is the proper ointment for their eyes, so that they may see things as they are. For at least, a poverty-stricken man can realize how painful poverty is, and therefore will not want others to be in such a painful condition like one's own. By seeing their faces, one whose body has been pricked by pins can understand the pain of others who are also pinpricked. Realizing that this pain is the same for everyone, one does not want others to suffer in this way. But one who has never been pricked by pins cannot understand this pain. Poverty-stricken men must automatically undergo austerities and penances because one does not have the wealth to possess anything. Thus, one's false prestige is vanquished. Always in need of food, shelter, and clothing, one must be satisfied with whatever is obtained by the mercy of Providence. And thus, undergoing such compulsory austerities is good for one, because this purifies one and completely frees one from false ego. Always hungry, longing for sufficient food, a poverty-stricken man gradually becomes weaker and weaker. Having no extra potency, one's senses are automatically pacified. A poverty-stricken man, therefore, is unable to perform harmful, envious activities. In other words, such a man automatically gains the results of the austerities and penances which are adopted voluntarily by saintly persons. As a result, saintly persons may freely associate with those who are poverty-stricken, but not with those who are rich. A poverty-stricken man, by association with saintly persons, very soon becomes uninterested in material desires, and the dirty things within the core of the heart are cleansed away. Sadhus, saintly persons, think of Krishna 24 hours a day. They have no other interest. So why should people neglect the association of such exalted spiritual personalities and instead try to associate with materialists, thus taking shelter of non-devotees, most of whom are proud and rich? Therefore, since these two sons of Kuvera, drunk with liquor named Varuni and Madhavi, and are unable to control their senses, have become blinded by the pride of celestial opulence, and have become attached to women, therefore, I shall relieve them of their false prestige. These two young boys, Nalakuvara and Manigriva, are by good fortune the sons of the great demigod Kuvera. But because of false prestige and madness after drinking liquor, they are so fallen that they are naked and cannot understand that they are naked. Therefore, because they are living like trees, for trees are naked but unconscious, these two young men should receive the bodies of trees. That will be proper punishment. But nonetheless, after they have become trees, and until they are released, by my mercy, they will have remembrance of their past sinful activities. And moreover, by my special favor, after the expiry of 100 years, by the measurement of the demigods, Nalakuvara and Manigriva will be able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, face to face. And thus, they will revive their real position as devotees. O Parikshit Maharaj, having thus spoken, the great saint Devarshi Narada returned to his ashram, known as Narayana Ashram, and Nalakuvara and Manigriva became twin Arjuna trees. To fulfill the truthfulness of the words of the greatest devotee Narada, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, slowly went to that spot where the twin Arjuna trees were standing. Although these two young boys are the sons of the very rich Kuvera, and I have nothing to do with them, Devarshi Narada is my very dear and affectionate devotee. And therefore, because he wants me to come face to face with them, I must do so for their deliverance. Having thus spoken, Krishna soon entered between the two Arjuna trees, and thus the big mortar to which he was bound turned crosswise and struck between the two trees. By dragging behind him with great force the wooden mortar tied to his belly, the boy Krishna uprooted the two trees. And by the great strength of the Supreme Person, Krishna, the two trees, with their trunks, leaves, and branches, trembled severely and fell to the ground with a great crash. Thereafter, in that very place where the two Arjuna trees had fallen, two great perfect personalities, who appeared like fire personified, came out of the two trees. The effulgence of their beauty illuminating all directions, with bowed heads, they offered obeisances to Sri Krishna, and with folded hands, they spoke the following words. O Lord Krishna, O Lord Krishna, your opulent mysticism is inconceivable. You are the supreme original person, the cause of all causes, both immediate and remote. And you are beyond this material creation. Learned brahmanas know, on the basis of the Vedic statement, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, that you are everything, and this cosmic manifestation, in its gross and subtle aspects, is your form. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of everything. The body, life, ego, and senses of every living entity are but your own self. You are the Supreme Person, Lord Vishnu. You are the imperishable controller. You are the time factor, the immediate cause, and you are material nature, consisting of the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance. You are the original cause of this material manifestation. You are the Supersoul, and therefore you know everything within the core of the heart of every living entity. O Lord, you exist before the creation. Therefore, who, trapped by a body of material qualities in this material world, can understand you? O Lord, your glories are covered by your own energy. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are Sankarsana, the origin of creation. And you are Vasudeva, the origin of the Chaturvyuha. And because you are everything, and are therefore the Supreme Brahman, we simply offer our respectful obeisances unto you. Appearing in bodies like those of an ordinary fish, tortoise, and hog, you exhibit activities impossible for such creatures to perform, activities that are extraordinary, incomparable, transcendental, and of unlimited power and strength. These bodies of yours, therefore, are not made of material elements, but are incarnations of your Supreme Personality. You are the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have now appeared with full potency for the benefit of all living entities within this material world. O supremely auspicious, we offer our respectful obeisances unto you. You are the Supreme Good. O most famous descendant and controller of the Yadu dynasty, O son of Vasudeva, O most peaceful, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto your lotus feet. O Supreme Form, we are always the servants of your servants. We are especially the servant of Narada Muni. So now, give us permission to leave for our home. For it is by the grace and mercy of Narada Muni that we have been able to see you face to face. Henceforward, may all of our words describe your pastimes, and may our ears engage in the oral reception of your glories. May our hands, legs, and other senses engage in actions pleasing to you. And may our minds always think of your lotus feet. May our heads offer obeisances to everything within this world, because all things are also your different forms. And may our eyes see the forms of Vaishnavas who are non-different from you. O Maharaj Parikshit, the two young demigods thus offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although Sri Krishna, the Supreme Godhead, is the master of all and was happily known as Gokuleshvara, the master of Gokula, Krishna was still bound to the wooden mortar by the ropes of the gopis. And therefore, widely smiling, Krishna spoke to the sons of Kubera the following words. The great Saint Narada Muni is very merciful, and by his curse, he showed the greatest favor to both of you, you who were mad after material opulence, and you had thus become blind. Although you fell from the higher planet Svargaloka and became Arjuna trees, you were most favored by him. I know about all of these incidents from the very beginning. When one is face to face with the sun, there is no longer darkness for one's eyes. Similarly, when one is face to face with a sadhu, a devotee, who is fully determined and surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one will no longer be subject to material bondage. O Nalakuvara and Manigriva, you may now both return home. Since you desire to be always absorbed in my devotional service, your desire to develop love and affection for me will be fulfilled, and you will never fall from that platform. O Maharaj Parikshit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, having spoken to the two demigods in this way, Nalakuvara and Manigriva circumambulated the Lord, who was bound to the wooden mortar, and they offered obeisances to him. After having taken permission from Lord Krishna, they returned to their respective homes. O Maharaj Parikshit, when the Yamala Arjuna trees fell, all the cowherd men in the neighborhood, hearing that fierce sound and fearing thunderbolts, went to that spot. And there they saw the fallen Yamala Arjuna trees upon the ground. But they were bewildered, because even though they could directly perceive that the trees had fallen, they could not trace out the cause for their having done so. Krishna was bound by the rope to the Ulukala, the mortar, which he was dragging. But how could Krishna have pulled down the trees? So who had actually done it? Where was the source of this incident? Considering all these astounding things, the cowherder men were doubtful and bewildered. But then, all the cowherder boys said, "It is Krishna who has done this. When he was in between the two trees, the mortar fell crosswise. Krishna dragged the mortar, and the two trees fell down. And after that, two beautiful men came out of the trees. Yes, we have seen this with our own eyes." But because of intense paternal affection, the cowherder men headed by Nanda Maharaj could not believe that Krishna could have uprooted the trees in such a wonderful way. Therefore, they could not put their faith in the words of the boys. But some of the men, however, were in doubt. Since Krishna was predicted to be equal to Narayan, well, it just might be that he could have done it. And when Nanda Maharaj saw his own son, bound with ropes to the wooden mortar and dragging it, Nanda smiled and released Krishna from his bonds. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 hey. Krishna, 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 Rakshama. Krishna, 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 Pahima. Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rama Raghava Rakshama. Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava Pahima. Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava Rakshama. Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava Pahima. Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava, Rama Raghava Rakshama. Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava, Krishna Keshava Pahima.